Small businesses. Direct Line guarantee to be any public liability insurance quote for the same cover. Can your insurance do that? New customers only. Qualifying criteria apply. Underwritten by UK Insurance Limited.
Wednesday, June 10th, 2015, you are listening to the Daily Dose Sports Podcast, and I am your host, Clint Daly, sports writer from Denver, Colorado. Hey, you know, we release a new podcast every single Wednesday, and we bring it just a little bit different of an outlook than you're going to get anywhere else on the world of sports. You know, it's not the same nonsense that you find on all the major networks and shows. I realize there's a ton of shows out there. There's a million podcasts out there. There's a lot of different things out there that you can watch, you can listen to. If you want, something a little bit different, if you pride yourself on being a little bit more informed than the average sports fan, you need to tune into the Daily Dose. We're going to give you a little bit of insight. We're going to give you some different things than you find anywhere else. Stick around. You know, the great thing about this podcast, and the great thing, you know, again, this goes back to the days when it was just the Daily Dose radio show, and we had the show back in the day. The great thing about it is I have really smart listeners. I have listeners that are a little bit more informed. If you're looking for that type of sports talk, that is the, hey, first time, long time, how's LeBron gonna do tonight? I'll just hang up and listen. No. That's not us. That's not here. That's not what we do. But if you want a little bit more insight, if you want to look at the games, that we're watching a little bit differently and take a little bit different angle on some of these stories that are out there, you're gonna like this show. If you would like to contact me, you can find me in a number of different places. Twitter handle is at Daily Dose Sports. That is D-A-L-Y, Daily Dose Sports. Same thing for Facebook. If you would like to liven up your Facebook feed a little bit and get something different, make sure to add us on Facebook. If you'd like to go over to the website, we have some articles over there. Put up some new articles every single week. DailyDoseSports.wordpress.com. Yes, they're pretty sarcastic. Yes, they're right on the edge of being satirical. You'll find some truth in some of those articles, though. You might want to check those out. And if you would like to email me, I've been getting some really interesting emails. In fact, I think we're going to have an email show coming up here in the next few weeks. I think I'm just going to do a show. We'll hit some sports topics, but I think we're just going to do an email show because, like I said, I have a smart audience. I have people out there listening that are a little bit more informed than the average sports fan. And as a result, I've gotten some intelligent questions coming in on the email. I've had some people ask me a little bit of relationship advice. I've had some entertainment type questions. Of course, we've had sports questions and what do you think of this, or who are your favorite this, or what about the top five this? We have some of those. But I've also gotten some questions about youth sports. What should I do in this situation considering maybe my son or my daughter? I've gotten some questions about politics and some of, you know, the things that are going on right now in the world. We're going to have an email show coming up, and we're going to sit down and recap some of those, and I'm going to give you some answers and a few thoughts on some things that are going on. If you would like to contribute to that, if you would like to email me here at the show, email me dailydosesports@gmail.com. That comes right to the show, and we can pick that up. We'll give you credit, whatever you want to sign it as. We'll give you as much credit or as much blame as you want. Sign it as whatever you want, and we will compile the greatest of, and we'll read some of those here in the next coming weeks. Because like I said, I have some interesting things that I think you're going to want to hear. Today on the show, we're going to be recapping the NBA Finals. Huge game in the NBA Finals last night. Want to talk about that? Want to talk about which direction the final seems to be going. Going to talk a little bit of NHL hockey and the Stanley Cup final that is going on right now, because that has been a very entertaining series. And you know what I want to look at? I want to look at which is better. Is the NBA Finals better? Is the NHL Stanley Cup final better? I want to compare those two a little bit, especially in this season, especially in this year, because I feel like both of these series are really entertaining right now. We have some really good stuff going on right now. And as usual, we will have our Daily Dose Top 5. If you haven't heard the Daily Dose Top 5, you want to stick around because you never know where it's going to go. It has a mind of its own, it goes off on its own, and we go a lot of different directions when we have the Daily Dose Top 5. You will definitely want to stick around for that. We have a few things coming out breaking news-wise. Of course, the big news last night was that the Cleveland Cavaliers found a way to hold off again and beat the Golden State Warriors in their series, best of seven, and the Cavs find a way to win. It wasn't pretty, again. But they got it done, and we're going to be talking about that series a little bit. Matthew Dellavedova, though, after the game, apparently Both Dellavedova and Iman Shumpert had to get some medical attention after the game. Dellavedova experienced severe cramping and had to get an IV. He had 20 points in 39 minutes. He was able to walk under his own power to the parking garage, and he was placed on a stretcher and taken by ambulance to a hospital. I'm glad that he was able to walk his way out. If it was LeBron, we probably would have had to get a wheelchair for him. Iman Shumpert apparently said that, you know, he's got some bruised, sprained, something in that shoulder. He took a pretty physical screen from Draymond Green in the first quarter and seemed to be favoring that shoulder. Legal screen. Wasn't anything dirty. Legal screen that he caught him with. But he's going to get probably an MRI on that shoulder today. We're going to be talking about that series quite a bit. San Francisco Giants pitcher, rookie pitcher at that, Chris Heston last night, goes with a no-hitter. And then here's the focus on this. Because for one thing, he goes out and throws a no-hitter. He hasn't thrown a no-hitter like in his life. He no-hits the Mets. Really had the sinker going, and the Giants are kind of getting warmed up here. I know they started 4-10, and we were kind of going, they're just going to have that year. They're 33-26 now, and they're sitting at second in the NL West. But, you know, the amazing thing to me about Chris Heston getting this no-hitter, he never threw a pitch over 91 miles an hour. He never threw over 91 miles an hour. For all the emphasis and for all these blown arms that we're seeing in these young kids, where we're seeing these pitchers go out and throw as hard as they can for 300 days out of the year, this kid no-hit the entire Mets team without ever throwing over 91. It can be done, folks. It can be done. He dominated last night with a sinker and not exactly with speed pitches. You know, the U.S. women, they won their first game in the Women's World Cup. What was that? Monday, they beat Australia 3-1. Don't know if you watched any of that, but that was a little bit of an interesting game. You know, my daughter plays a little bit of soccer, so I was watching some of that. She wanted to watch that. We were watching some of that together. And a couple of things going on that kind of struck me. I didn't think the USA played very well, especially early. They kind of got it going, and who was it? Megan Rapinoe had two goals, and the U.S. kind of got going and took over late. You can see that they're the most talented. They are the oldest team in the current World Cup, average age. But, you know, it's kind of interesting to me because if you watch the FIFA official, she hated Team USA. And I don't know exactly what her issue was, but I have a guess that it might have been because the United States is the one that is trying to blow FIFA up. And maybe, you know, her bosses might have said, when you get a chance, see if you can light them up a little bit. Because she couldn't stand Team USA. Not only was she calling calls and quick to throw out the yellow cards, then she'd come over and like chew them out and like scold them about what they were doing. It got so bad at one point. Megan Rapinoe, I think it's Rapinoe. She went over to the official and actually tugged on the patch, on the FIFA patch on her shoulder, and said, "Is this thing for real?" Yes, it got that bad. Now you're starting to hear some talk. You're starting to hear some talk, and there are some talking heads on some major networks. You know who I'm talking about. There are some talking heads out there, and they are starting to say things like, you know, goalkeeper Hope Solo, she should be suspended. She should be sat down. When you think of the violence and the things that she's done, if this was a man, she would be sat down. We would be suspending her. If she was in the NFL, the NFL would be suspending her. They would be sitting her down. There's no way she would be participating in these games. And she should be sat down. Wait a second. I'll fully admit, Hope Solo, she's one of those ones that is a little bit crazy. And even if you're her teammate, you might not be able to stand her. One, she is really, really good, but not the point. Here's the thing. She didn't actually have, like it wasn't like she knocked some guy out unconscious in the elevator. Can we slow down a little bit with what it was that she did? I mean, yes, she had some issues with like a family member, and they were, it sounded like kind of a pushing and shoving kind of thing, and the police came, and she was kind of, you know, talking, and apparently was intoxicated, and was having words with the officers, and I don't condone any of that, but can we slow down a little bit on comparing her with Ray Rice? I didn't see her knock her husband out in the elevator and him be drug out unconscious. Not quite the same thing. I know we kind of want to compare the two. Not exactly. the same thing. Speaking of the NFL, Seattle Seahawks cornerback Richard Sherman says that it's unfortunate that New York Jets cornerback Antonio Cromartie is criticizing him, saying that Sherman isn't the best cornerback in the NFL because he doesn't switch sides of the ball. Seattle typically plays a zone. Sherman is responsible for one side of that zone. He locks up that side. And Cromartie kind of called him out and said he's not the best corner in the league. He doesn't even play everybody. He stays on one side and all he does is play zone. And he has a point. He has a point. And then Sherman comes out and says, you know, that was unfortunate. You would think after me helping him get into the Pro Bowl for 2014, we went to the Super Bowl. He wouldn't have made it to the Pro Bowl otherwise. And now he's going to talk bad about me. Here's the thing about both these players. Let's be real clear. And I know everybody is going to jump on one bandwagon or the other. Either you love Richard Sherman, you hate Richard Sherman, whatever. Let's be real clear about both of these players. If you don't have the big dogs up front putting pressure on the passer, I don't care how good of a corner you are. You're horrible. I could care less how good you are. So both of these guys kind of sniping back and forth of each other really should be looking at their defensive line and the front seven and saying, hey, you guys make us anything. Because if we're out here on an island defending for 7-8 seconds, we're going to get lit up like a Christmas tree. And that's just a fact. So both of these guys, these corners, it's gotten to the point where wide receivers and corners have just kind of turned into the prima donnas of the NFL world and of the football world. I don't know when that started, maybe back in the 90s sometime, but it's kind of painful to watch these guys go back and forth. Hey, let's talk some NBA finals. You know, we had the game last night. Like I said, Cleveland hung on. It wasn't necessarily pretty. So now we have an idea of we have this series like figured out, right? I mean, Cavs are up 2-1. They're in control. LeBron James is just too good, and they have figured out how to shut down that Warriors offense. Be physical with them, push them around, and that is going to be enough to get it done. You don't have to score many points, and you can eke out these victories. They're not necessarily pretty, but they're effective. So you're going to hear a lot of people telling you today, we have this series figured out. This series is over because Cleveland just keeps dictating in the games what's going to happen. And that's how this is going to go. They're going to win this next game. They're going to, you know, be able to win one or two down the road and this series is over. Except I'm not exactly sure. Because let's be honest. Cleveland could be up 3-0. They could also be down 0-3 real easy. I mean, the Cavs were up 20 last night, but then it got kind of interesting, and I can't figure out these games from one quarter to the next, let alone from one game to the next. I mean, think about this series. Think of how this series has gone. Game one, Cavs played pretty well, and the Warriors were okay. They weren't great, but LeBron goes for 44, and Kyrie fractured that kneecap or whatever he did. I don't know how you fracture the kneecap on a play when you don't actually hit the kneecap. I know they said, well, he hit it somewhere, but I don't know exactly how that works. And let's get one thing clear. It wasn't from too many minutes. I heard some people, you know, blaming part-time assistant coach David Blatt, because we all know LeBron is the coach. But it wasn't from too many minutes. If it's going to happen, it's going to happen. I mean, and let's be real clear. Kyrie Irving has been hurt every single year he's ever played, going back to high school. So it's not anything new. He's always hurt. And I'm not necessarily doubting his toughness entirely. But there are some questions about Kyrie Irving, I think, as far as can he ever stay healthy. But, you know, in that game one, Klay Thompson, Steph Curry go for 46 combined, and somehow Golden State finds a way to win in overtime. Kind of ugly. And we started to hear, you know, the people talking and saying things. Well, LeBron missed three shots, you know, in crunch time. He had two turnovers in overtime when it mattered the most. And the Warriors just have too much depth. They're just wearing them down. And Cleveland's just running out of people. LeBron has somehow carried this horrible team to the playoffs and got them this far. But it just looks like the Warriors have too much depth. Now, remember what I told you last week. And I know when I said it, that a lot of you are going, dude, you might be crazy. You might be out of your mind. But I told you last week, the Cavaliers are better defensively without Kyrie Irving. They're better defensively without Kevin Love. So we sit here and we look at, well, yeah, those two guys are out. And yes, they would help offensively. But defensively, they're both liabilities. And I know what you're thinking. You're saying, yeah, but did you see in game one, did you see those two great blocks that Kyrie Irving had? He had the block on Steph Curry. I mean, he was flying around. He was playing better defense than we've ever seen. Yeah, yeah, he was. And you know what else I saw? I saw Golden State shooters with a little bit more time to get their feet set. I saw Steph Curry not being as out-physicaled as he's being pushed around right now. And after allowing 108 points with Kyrie in Game 1, the Cavaliers have now allowed 93 and 91. Do they struggle to score? Of course they do. They're struggling like crazy to score. LeBron's having to go out and get 40 a night, every night. If he doesn't, they're going to be in trouble. And then they're just trying to find other guys just to kind of chip in here and there. But, you know, they weren't going to outscore Golden State anyways. So maybe it's less offense. You know, these long possessions that they have. If you notice, Cleveland's running the shot clock down to, you know, nothing and then taking these shots. And more defense. It's working somehow. And the Warriors, let's look at one thing real clear about the Warriors. We've looked at this team kind of all season, and we kind of thought, you know, they're a jump shooting team. They're going to struggle at some point. They have struggled at times. But they are trying to figure out how to win a championship. They've never done it. In fact, no one's really done it in this series except LeBron James and a little bit of Mike Miller. And I don't know if Mike Miller really has done it, but he's been involved in it and has at least watched it real close. Isn't it a little bit weird? I do find it a little bit odd. When you watch LeBron James come out of games, he doesn't really go to David Blatt. He goes straight to Mike Miller. And I don't know if it's a trust thing and he's just picking his brain. But he goes over to Mike Miller, and you can almost see him saying, "What are you seeing? What are you seeing? What should we change? What should we adjust?" Not his coach. Not his coach. He goes right to Mike Miller. Miller last night chipped in and had a pretty great play. The diving, saving pass, hustle play for a guy that, let's face it, physically is not capable of competing at that high of a level. But the Cavs have got to continue to have LeBron get his 40-plus. And I want to talk a little bit about how these games are going because, you know, the Warriors aren't doubling him. They're allowing him to play one-on-one and just hoping to limit everyone else. And I'm not going to say they're allowing him to get his. That's not the case. They're just allowing him to play one-on-one. I know we heard Mark Jackson the other night say they're doubling him. They're just doubling him at the basket. No, that's just called help side defense. That's not doubling him. If they were doubling him, they'd be running someone at him like we talked about before, running someone at him, and then you got to help and recover or rotate or whatever. They're not doing that. They're just letting him go one-on-one. When he gets to the basket, of course, someone slides over and tries to eliminate the dunk or the layup, but other than that, they're just playing him one-on-one. And I think they're hoping they're going to wear him down. It still could be a very, very long series. But the problem is for the Warriors right now is that Mozgov and Tristan Thompson are causing big problems inside. Offensive rebounds, changing some shots at the defensive end, rebounding well at the defensive end, and Golden State's big men with Andrew Bogut and Azili are kind of pouting and being passive. In fact, I would say the biggest problem that I have seen right now, and I've told you, I was a high school coach for a while. My job was as an assistant or as a head coach was to read these kind of things. I look for body language. I look a lot of times at players at body language. I try to read what are they portraying with their bodies. We always look for that with our players. What's his body language? You have bad attitude, good attitude. What's his body language? I look for these things a lot. And I think one of the biggest problems for Golden State has been they have been pouting. As a team, they've been pouting as a team. Bad, bad, bad body language. And I'm not talking about the typical stuff. I'm not talking about the throwing your hands up and waving the officials. And I'm not talking about that kind of stuff. It's more subtle than that kind of stuff. It's a little bit more different. But as a team, they're kind of pouting. Have you noticed that their bigs rarely just run the floor? They just get out, we get a rebound and they just take off down the floor. It doesn't happen very often. Bogut's typically one of the last people down the floor. And the mindset and the poutiness of that is the mentality of, well, they're not going to give me the ball anyways. This is the Steph Curry, Klay Thompson show. I'm not going to get it. I'm not looked at as one of the primary scorers. Why am I going to hurry down there? And it's not necessarily that you would get it. But you know what it does? It puts pressure on Cleveland's big men to get back. And you'll notice when they start doing that, you start to see a little bit different of a mentality with this Golden State team. You're starting to see, you've seen throughout this series, perimeter players are not moving much. They don't have any energy. Steph Curry has not had much energy. They cut, they pass, they stand, they look. That's pouting. That's body language. I'm not running through three or four screens. It's too much work. I get grabbed. I get fouled. That's pouting. And sometimes, you know, those quick shots, they come down and they take those quick shots. You'll see Klay Thompson will take it. Draymond Green sometimes will take it. Steph will take it. I'm going to get us back into this game all by myself. That's body language. That's pouting. And that's what I don't like. So this series is over, right? Based on that, based on the body language, some of the things that we're seeing in this series, hey, Cleveland's just too physically tough. They're just pushing them around. And the Warriors, like I said, they're trying to learn how to win. They're trying to learn this on the fly. They don't have a LeBron James that they go to and say, dude, what do we do? How do we figure this out? How do we get ourselves going? They don't have that guy. They don't have anybody that's been there. Steve Kerr was there as a player. It's very, very different to do it as a player and then do it as a coach. And remember, as a player, it wasn't like, you know, he was the Michael Jordan. He was just a role player. So it's a little bit different thing. So it should be over. But you know what? Speaking of watching body language, speaking of looking for kind of these tells that we see in games, I thought I saw something change a little bit last night. The Warriors were down by 17 going into the fourth quarter. And I thought, and I might be wrong, I might be completely wrong, and if you asked him, he might not say this, but I thought I saw Steve Kerr challenge Steph Curry and Klay Thompson. I thought I saw, and maybe I'm wrong, like I said, I thought I saw him kind of pointing at them and kind of getting in their face. And I don't think it was anything, you know, real outright where he was like screaming at him. It wasn't that. But I thought I saw him kind of challenge them and say, stop feeling sorry for yourselves and start playing. Start playing together. Stop going out on your own and doing your own thing. Go out and start working harder at both ends of the floor because you guys are pouting and you're feeling sorry for yourselves. And some of those pouty characteristics started to change a little bit. They were down by 20 in the third quarter. They cut it to 3. It was a one-possession game with 2:27 left in the fourth quarter. Now, did the Warriors learn anything? I don't know. But I started to see more energy in that fourth quarter without the ball. And I know that they're that team that when they're down 20, they almost have that mentality of, yeah, but we can get back in this in the fourth quarter. We're going to get going. But I started to see a little bit more of a toughness, I guess, from them. You know, when I watched Steph Curry, and we talked about Steph Curry a couple weeks ago, and I said some of the things, some of the players that he reminds me of, and some of the things that I kind of look at his game as being reminiscent of some of the former players before him. And I said, one of the players sometimes he reminds me of is a Reggie Miller. And sometimes he'll work and he'll get himself off of screens and he'll work without the ball to get himself open for shots. But I told you even then, sometimes he's not like Reggie. Reggie was nonstop. Reggie didn't stop moving. He was constant movement. He was constantly going. Sometimes Steph, I don't know if it's laziness or if it's still a growing thing and he's just physically, he's not tough enough to always go like this. But he has had a lack of energy without the ball. And the other thing that I think I've seen a little bit with Steph Curry, he's not as adept at reading screens as he is going to be eventually. You know, reading screens, and I don't want to get too technical on you. I don't want to get this too deep into basketball talk and that kind of thing where you don't understand what I'm talking about. But when you're coming off a screen and I'm trying to get myself open by using a screen, so my teammate comes and sets a screen for me, it's not just the basics of coming off shoulder to shoulder and boom, I'm open. I know a lot of times we think that way, but you have to have an ability to read a screen, and it's a little bit contrary to sometimes what people think. The best readers of screens to me, one, I think are people that have had older siblings, that their siblings kind of beat them up and they learn how to kind of get away from them and they try to run from them and they have that ability. One of the best players that I ever had growing as a coach was a player that she had older siblings, and it was a female. She was phenomenal at reading screens. She was so good. She was so good at getting away from. And I saw a little bit of that late with Steph Curry. Did you see last night they were running the inbound play for Steph, And he had a staggered screen. So he had a triple stagger. And what that means is we're going to set a screen, and then you run to the next one, another screen, set another one, another screen, and they ran three of them for him. And when Matthew Dellavedova was defending him, what Dellavedova tried to do is he tried to cheat under all the screens and just shortcut and get to the spot that, Steph was at. And Steph doesn't always read screens. Sometimes he just runs through screens. Set it, I'll curl off of it, and I'll see what I have. He read it. And this is what I mean when you don't just come off shoulder to shoulder. You have to find, with your peripheral vision, you have to see your defender. I'm not just running and looking for the ball. I'm not just running and looking at the screen being set. I have to see how is my defender playing it. That's why some of the best players that get screens and are screen readers are players that have played in a motion offense. Because you have to do that. You have to read what your defender does in order to know where to go. And Steph, instead of just running to the spot that was designated, he saw Dellavedova cheating, and he dropped back and he faded on the screen. And that allowed him to be wide open. Steph doesn't always do that. Sometimes I think he still has a ways to go in learning how to read screens. And it's a tough skill to learn because, you have to look at your defender. Don't look at where you're going. Don't look at the basketball, which is your natural instinct to do. But good players, and when you looked at someone like Reggie Miller, he would be constant movement, and he was just watching you the whole time. You're going to cut under, I'm going to fade out on you. You're going to run behind me, I'm going to curl to the basket. Steph is getting better in that regard, but he's not quite there yet. Started to see him have more energy off the ball last night, though, in the fourth quarter. And Klay Thompson started to get more aggressive when he got the ball. Not necessarily the threes, but sometimes just the shot fake at the three and going to the basket. Started to see more of that. We saw David Lee, kind of forgotten in this whole series, is David Lee, who stepped up last night and gave Golden State a little bit of a presence inside. I told you, I think Andrew Bogut has been pouting most of the series. He doesn't play hard all the time. But David Lee stepped in, and you could feel it kind of being contagious. Lee scores 11 points, has 4 rebounds, was a plus 17 on the floor in just 13 minutes. Now, like I said, you're going to hear a lot about this series is over, and maybe it is, but I thought I saw some changes last night that might make me think Golden State might have figured some things out. Remember, they were down 2-1 to Memphis, and they figured some things out and won 3 in a row and closed the series out in 6. I don't know if this is the same situation. Golden State struggles a little bit with the physicality. We've seen that. Can they step up and figure some things out? We've still got to play with energy. We can't feel sorry for ourselves. I thought I saw some of that. We'll see if this goes forward. I told you I picked Golden State in 6. Right now, I'll stick with that. I'll see if that still happens. I'm going to stick with that. I think they might have figured some things out. And I'm not saying everything's rosy. This next game coming up on Thursday night, tomorrow night, is huge for Golden State. You cannot afford to go down 3-1. You go down 3-1, it's going to be very, very tough to win 3 out of 4 against a team that somehow, it's kind of ugly, but Cleveland Cavaliers are getting it done when they need to. And LeBron James has been absolutely spectacular. We're going to talk a little bit more about LeBron James in just a few minutes because I have some thoughts on LeBron James that I want to share with you. NHL Stanley Cup playoffs. They're in the final now, and it has been a very entertaining series. I know I've been accused even of being kind of an NHL honk, and hey, you're always trying to blow up the NHL and say how great it is. It has been a very entertaining series, and the crazy part about it, Tampa has led 92 minutes out of the 98 that they have played, but they're up just 2-1. And Chicago Blackhawks, we know, very resilient. It seems like about the time you start to count them out, they somehow find a way to manage to get back into it and get going again. Neither Jonathan Toews or Patrick Kane have scored yet. You have to feel like that's coming eventually, isn't it? That's going to get going eventually, you would have to think. To be fair, on the other side, you know, with Tampa, Steven Stamkos hasn't had any goals either. So I guess, you know, they feel like they probably have, you know, some more scoring coming from him. But don't be surprised at all if we see Chicago bounce back. Tampa is the young team. They're maybe a little bit more talented, but sometimes that experience and that veteran kind of savvy that Chicago has may just pay off for them, and they know how to win. They know how to win, and there's something to be said for that. That's what we're seeing in the NBA right now. LeBron James, he knows how to win. He knows when the game is on the line, we have to get this stop. We have to get this possession. We have to get a rebound here. It seems like same thing with Chicago. They know when their backs are against the wall, they always seem like they come out and they just find ways. It has been a really entertaining series. For as much as Tampa has led, it's been a tight series. I mean, never more than a goal apart. And I know, I'm a honk for the NHL. You might want to tune in and watch it. Extremely, insanely exciting right now. Now, I want to ask you a question. Which is better? Which is better? We posted an article. You can go over and check it out. DailyDoseSports.wordpress.com. You can check it out. I posted an article. Which is better? NBA playoffs, NBA finals, or the NHL final? Which one do you think is better? And like I said, we have some smart listeners. We have some people out there that understand sports maybe a little bit better than on some of the other shows that are out there. But when I look at it, especially this year, because I think this year we're seeing two really, really good sets of finals. I think they've both been so entertaining. Both of them are kind of must-see TV. You are seeing excellent finishes, pretty good play, not always great play, but pretty good play. And I posted the article yesterday. I heard from some people on Twitter. I heard from some people on email. NBA fans are pointing at the TV ratings. Saying, look at all the people that watch. NHL fans are pointing at the excitement and the drama on every single shift. There's a feeling in these buildings that every single shift, who knows what could happen. I mean, you are living and dying on every single shift. I wanted to take a look at just a little bit. And if you want to, reach out to me, hit me at Twitter at Daily Dose Sports. Tell me what you think is better. Send me an email, whatever. Which is better, NBA Finals or the Stanley Cup Final? I want to give you a couple thoughts. And I don't want to rewrite the article. I already did that once. But I want to give you a couple thoughts. Because when we look at the two teams that are playing on either side, you've got Golden State. You've got the Cleveland Cavaliers. On the hockey side, you've got Chicago versus Tampa. And I think both of these are great matchups. Because they both have kind of clashing styles. Golden State wants to get out and run. They want to shoot, from the outside. They want to put a lot of shots up. Cleveland is exactly the opposite. They want to go out and limit what you get. They want to take their time offensively. They want to play a slow it down defensive kind of game. It totally clashing styles, but it makes for interesting, the matchup kind of dictates how good the series is, and it makes for very, very interesting matchups. Same thing a little bit on the Chicago side. On the NHL side, Chicago's not quite the slow it down team, but make no mistake, Tampa wants to get up and down as much as they can. Chicago's not quite at that level. They'll slow it down a little bit, and they want to see if they can get their scorers some opportunities. The great thing about the NHL game is that you're seeing a lot of up and down. There are times that you're seeing 3 and 4 minutes without any kind of stoppage. When I look at just the teams that are in it, it is really, really close. There's some great matchups that we're watching this year. One thing I want to look at a little bit, when I look at the TV coverage of both of these, because there's advantages and disadvantages for both sides. On the NBA side, you're on ABC. You're on a big network. We know where to find you. You can turn it on. You've got the three-man booth kind of going. You've got Mike Breen, who I think is very, very good. You've got Mark Jackson, who is also there. And then you've got Jeff Van Gundy, again, sometimes, who is also there. Do you ever kind of feel like watching this series that Mark Jackson is looking a little bit and going, yeah, Golden State sure looks good. I mean, they looked good last year too. You kind of feel like he's just like, I mean, he was Golden State's coach just a year ago and then got fired and ended up having to go to the booth. Don't you just kind of get the feeling that he's kind of like, yeah, you guys would be better if maybe you had another coach, or maybe, the guy you had last year, he was pretty good. And then you have Jeff Van Gundy, who I think he has some insight. I think he has some things to say. But sometimes some of the things that come out of his mouth, I'm a little bit stunned at. I'm a little bit shocked at. I mean, I'm going to talk about the officiating in a minute. But there was a play last week where I think it was Mozgov got the ball in the paint. And he shuffled his feet. He took kind of a two-step, and then he pivoted, and then he hopped. And it was literally like five steps. And Jeff Van Gundy had the gall to say, that's not an NBA travel. Really? Really? Five steps? What is an NBA travel? Six steps? Seven steps? Eight? At what point do we say, no, that actually was a travel? I guess I don't know your gauge. If five isn't a travel, then I don't know exactly what counts as a travel. It's a little bit weird to me. And like I said, I want to talk about the officiating in just a minute. But it's a little bit strange to me that we would look at things and say, now in Little League or in middle school or in high school or maybe even in college, that would be a travel. But here in the NBA, we at the utmost level, at the highest level you could possibly play at, you don't have to follow the rules. Those other clowns, the lower levels, they got to follow the rules. But you don't have to follow the rules because you're the greatest players in the world. Shouldn't we kind of hold you to a stricter standard? Shouldn't you kind of be expected to follow the rules even more so because you're supposed to be the best in the business? It's a little bit odd to me. Now, on the other side, we have the NHL. And I've told you before, I struggle with the NHL because I can't find the games half the time. Sometimes they're on NBC. I think tonight it's on NBCSN or something, whatever that is. Some nights it's on VH1. Some nights it's on the Cartoon Network. I don't know. The announcers, the TV coverage itself, Doc Emmerich and Pierre McGuire are phenomenal. Doc Emmerich is probably the best sports announcer maybe in the business. He is so good at painting a picture. And if you're someone that doesn't tune into NHL because you sit there and say, I don't get it, I don't understand it, just listen to Doc Emmerich. His ability not only to paint a picture and tell you what's going on, but somehow to pronounce all these names right in the amount of time that he does it is amazing. And I cannot explain this enough. As someone who does some writing, as someone who writes and is often going to the thesaurus, to hear Doc Emmerich's ability on the fly to describe the exact same play 50,000 different ways is amazing to me. Just listen. And again, if you're not an NHL fan, just turn it on and listen to how many different words Doc Emmerich has for the word pass. He passes it to so-and-so. He scoots it to so-and-so. He shuffles it to so-and-so. He has a million words for that word. It is absolutely amazing. Doc Emmerich is legitimately one of the best in the business anywhere. I would give a little bit of an advantage to the NHL. I know Mark Jackson and Jeff Van Gundy, they're not horrible. They're not the worst I've ever heard, but sometimes they say some things that I'm shocked at. And there are times that they'll look at the game and a little bit I'm going, are you watching the same game I'm watching? Because some of the stuff that I see is a little bit surprising that you're not calling certain players or certain coaches or certain instances out. I don't know. Sometimes I don't get that crew exactly. Speaking of the officiating, the NBA officials are right at the top of the list of worst officials in the game. And this isn't this year, and this isn't this year. This is consistently. They miss so many calls, and they are so inconsistent with what they call. I don't have any idea, as a player or as a coach, I don't know how do you deal with the NBA officiating. It is so bizarre to me. I can't make sense of it even. I know basketball in general, because it's a constant sport, and I'll explain that. It's a constant. You don't have the huddles. You don't have the breaks. But neither does the NHL. And the thing about the NHL, I rarely notice the officiating in the NHL. Every once in a while, you say, oh, that call, maybe that wasn't a call, or they missed this call. But it's not so glaring. In the NBA, the inconsistencies, I can't figure out half the time what they're calling. There was a play last night, and maybe this is just me. There was a play last night where Steph Curry was dribbling the ball. It was late in the game, and Steph Curry dribbles the ball across half court, and LeBron James just kind of dives into him, takes him out, and the ball gets loose. And we heard, there was no call. We heard the announcers, we heard Van Gundy and Jackson kind of praising the efforts of LeBron James. And I understand the effort of LeBron James. He hustled back, he hurried back, but Steph is dribbling the ball. It's not like the ball was uncontrolled. That's absolutely a foul. No foul called. And there was no mention of a foul being called. It's a little bit strange to me. Like I said before, I'll see some of the travels that go on in the NBA. And I'm not saying just one player or one guy. It's a bunch of different guys. And none of it's called. And I can't figure out as an official, well, that was three, so that's not really called. Or that. And I know this goes back even to the days of like Karl Malone. He would always kind of shuffle his feet and get away with it. There are times, I think it was in game one, LeBron James took the ball and literally walked up the court 1, 2, 3 steps and never put the ball on the floor. He's just walking down the floor, just daring someone to call it. And they don't call it. There is a clip, you can go find it on YouTube. I believe it's of Dwayne Wade. And I think he takes, and is not called, takes, I believe it's 7 steps without a dribble. 7. The officiating is so bad. We saw the play at the end of game 1 when LeBron was fouled. Clearly fouled. They hacked him across the arm. No call. I can't figure out why. And I understand not letting the officials take over the game, but when it's that blatant, how do you not make that call? I've also seen, yes, before he got fouled, he traveled pretty blatantly too. No call. I can't figure out the inconsistency. I saw last night, I think it was maybe Iguodala drove the lane, or maybe Draymond Green drives right down the lane, jumps up. We saw, you know, Mozgov kind of jump out and into him. Pretty easy. I mean, that's pretty, you know, collision in the air. Green is kind of going toward the basket, but there's no question Mozgov goes toward him. You're allowed lateral position, but you have to go straight up. That wasn't the case. No call there. I can't figure out the officiating. It's not a matter of, you know, I can't figure it out. I can't figure out what constitutes a foul and what doesn't constitute a foul. The traveling, the foul calls, goaltending, they can't seem to figure out. Last night, they were not going to call that a goaltend. The ball has to pass through the net in order for the basket to count. Tristan Thompson poked it back up and out. And again, Mark Jackson and Jeff Van Gundy, I'm not quite sure about that call. Well, I am. The ball has to pass through the net. It has to pass completely through the goal for it to be a basket. And they poked it out, and the officials finally stopped. Well, yeah, is that a basket? I don't know if that's a basket. Should we check? Do we have to look at this? And then they look at the instant replay, and half the time I don't know what they're looking at. The officiating in the NBA is atrocious. Now, I don't know that it's necessarily biased one way or the other. It just doesn't make any sense. It's just so inconsistent. Like I said, on the NHL side, I barely notice the officiating. Every once in a while, you'll see a call here or there that you're like, they may have got that wrong, or they might have. But it's not so blatant as the NBA. The NBA is horribly officiated. No question about that. The games themselves, over on the NBA side, great finishes. One beef I do have, especially with the NBA, is there are way too many timeouts. Oh my goodness. There are so many timeouts. We are stretching this out and stretching this out. Last night, what do they each have? 37 timeouts each? And then you have the TV timeout. And then you have another timeout. And then you have a TV timeout. And then they take a timeout. And then you have a TV. I'm going, oh my goodness. They haven't. This game should be over, and we still have a fourth quarter to go. Way too many timeouts. And the problem is it makes it choppy. As a viewer, I'm sometimes getting ready to get up and walk away because I'm like, man, you guys haven't been playing for 20 minutes here. On the NHL side, there are times that you have a little bit of timeout here or there, but it's not like that. There are a lot of face-offs, but there's not nearly as much choppiness to it with all the timeouts. I do give the NHL a little bit of an advantage about that. Both of these series and both of these finals have been great. They have been really, really entertaining to watch. I'm going to give a little bit of an advantage to the NHL. Having said that, I know you're saying, oh yeah, you're just a big NHL fan. Honestly, I watch the NBA far more. I just think the NHL right now, it's a little bit better. Having said that, NBA is getting 15.6 million viewers on their broadcast compared to the NHL, which is getting about 5.5 million viewers. Very, very different. NBA is getting 3 times the viewers that the NHL is getting. 3 times. And I know the only people really watching the NHL are people wearing denim in Chicago and people wearing tank tops down in Tampa. And then all those Canadians, you know, and their 50 different words for denim. But it's just that I think it's hard. And one other thing that's a little bit weird to me, why does the NHL schedule their games at like 5 o'clock? Like Mountain Standard Time, it's like 5 o'clock. Why are you not making this prime time? Are you just like admitting defeat? We're not going to put in primetime. No one will watch anyways. Why are you having a matinee start? This is the finals. You don't start it early. You put it in prime time. It's weird. It's very, very strange. I can't quite figure that out. I give the NHL, I think it's a little bit more entertaining, but the NBA has been very, very good. And let's be real clear, because NBA, you have the viewers 3-1. But the NFL, remember, I told you, the NBA is getting about 15 million viewers, almost 16 million viewers. The NFL draft, not the games, to quote Allen Iverson, not a game, the draft drew almost 46 million viewers. So you both are kind of small potatoes when we're looking at viewers just in general. One last thing to say about the NBA. I was talking about the officiating and how I can't figure it out. It's so weird because when they go to their replays, they look at their replays and they have former great NBA official Steve Javy is the guy that kind of looks at the replays and says, here's what I'm seeing. Let's get one thing on the table. Steve Javy was horrible. Every player in the league hated him as an official. I mean, he was crass. He would go out of his way to go after certain guys. He was a horrible official. Now he's the expert. He's the guy telling us, well, here's what they should be calling. I don't want to know what you think they should be calling. You are awful as an official. Okay, I'm off. I'm done. Why am I yelling? American Pharoah. We talked a little bit about, you know, the Triple Crown, and is American Pharoah gonna actually win this thing? He won the Triple Crown on Saturday. I mean, and basically led from start to finish the entire way at Belmont to win the Triple Crown. Now, we actually have people saying, well, yeah, but he's not as good as Secretariat. I don't care. I mean, if nothing else, at least it made us talk about horse racing, and I watched like 5 minutes of horse racing, so I guess that's better than, you know, the alternative. You know who else doesn't care about the comparison? American Pharoah. I don't think he cares one bit. He just wants to be put out stud at this point. And there is a national writer. I'm not going to say who it is. There's a national writer. Very, very smart guy. A guy that I read pretty consistently. Has good columns. It's a smart guy. He is pushing for American Pharoah to be named Sports Person of the Year. Like I said, this is not a dummy. This is not some local hack, you know, fish wrap guy. This is a national guy who is very, very intelligent. Sports Person of the Year? Really? A horse? I don't even know if we can name him Athlete of the Year. If we can name him Athlete of the Year, then I want to name like Jimmy Johnson's car Athlete of the Year when he wins a bunch of races. I don't know if the horse really knows what's going on. Again, he kind of just wants to get out, get some sugar cubes, and like go out and be put to stud, doesn't he? Isn't that just kind of his focus? So again, you know who doesn't care? American Pharoah. He kind of just wants to get out and meet up with a couple fillies, get his drink on, do some shots, go to the club. He could care less. But you know who's not getting put out to stud? American Pharoah. Owner says he's going to run in a couple more races. If you are American Pharoah, you got to be sitting there, what? I won the Triple Crown and I still don't get to go party? What do I have to do? Win the Triple Crown? I've already done that. Owner says he wants to keep some interest in the sport. He's going to have him run at least a race or two more. Yet this season, I don't get it. That horse has got to, that would probably make me mad. If I'm the horse, I got to be mad at that point. Because I've done everything you've asked me to do. What else is there for me to do? And you still won't just put me out to stud. Come on. Ridiculous. As we do every single week, we have got to get to our Daily Dose Top 5. Daily Dose Top 5, I've told you, it has a mind of its own. It can go a number of different ways. We get on a number of different subjects. You'd never know. And this week is no exception. Let me ask you a question, listener. We have smart listeners. I would like to know, are you cheering for LeBron James? Are you cheering for him? And I'm not talking about, are you cheering for Cleveland? I understand. Being here in Denver, I have seen victory snatched from the jaws of Cleveland a number of times. But are you cheering for LeBron? Not the city, not the town. Are you cheering for LeBron? Because there are a number of fans who do not like LeBron James. He is a polarizing figure. You either are watching because you love him or you watch him because you hate him. Very, very polarizing. Make no mistake. And I'm going to go through this list here. And our list is the top five reasons so many fans do not like LeBron James. Now, I'm going to make a confession to you. Growing up as a kid here in Denver, we obviously, basketball-wise, we had the Nuggets. And I've been watching the Nuggets since back in the ABA days, before the NBA, before we were members of the NBA. But you would watch these other teams. You know, you're watching the Lakers and you're watching the Celtics. And I would watch the Celtics, especially, you know, Boston, they had their success in the 80s and that kind of thing. And I watched, you know, Larry Bird. Larry Bird was a phenomenal player. But I'm going to be real honest. I'll be transparent about this. Growing up as a kid, I couldn't stand Larry Bird. I hated Larry Bird. I've gone back now and watching what he does, and I watched him a lot, but going back and just have an appreciation of the game that he played. Because he was such a phenomenal player. He had such a head for the game, and physically, he didn't have all these tools. He certainly didn't have the tools that LeBron had, but he had such a mentalness for the game. He had such a mental aptitude, and he had such a high basketball IQ that he was capable of playing at the highest level. He was capable of finding ways to beat you again and again and again and again. And again, he had size, but he didn't have a lot of physical tools. Couldn't jump, couldn't run, ran like a pregnant deer. But I didn't really appreciate what he did on the basketball floor. And it took me years to go back and say, no, he's a phenomenal player. I hated him as a kid. I couldn't stand him. I would go so far. Sometimes I would even cheer a little bit for the Lakers over the Celtics. Because I was just so sick of that Celtics team. I couldn't stand him. And the Boston fans and sick of Bird and McHale and all. I couldn't stand it. You might hate LeBron James. Don't fail to appreciate the greatness of LeBron James. He is a phenomenal player. He is an amazing player, and he is one of the greats ever. Do I put him on my Mount Rushmore? Not yet, but this is still a long going process. He's still playing. He's still participating in games. It's not like Magic and Larry and Michael who are done. We've still got to watch him evolve as a player, and he still has a long ways to go. Appreciate what he does. Appreciate what he brings to the game. But I'm going to give you the top five reasons so many fans do not like LeBron James. Number five on our list, and these are rated in order of importance. Number five on the list, the decision part two. Because he was in Miami, but then he decided, I'm going home. What a great guy. He's going to go home. He's going to bring it back to the city that he's from. He's going to go back to Cleveland and try to win them a championship. Yeah, except that it was only because Miami had been run completely into the ground and he didn't have anybody to play with. Bosh was hurt, banged up. Dwayne Wade looks like he's kind of getting to the point at the end of his career. And LeBron looked at the situation and said, hey, I want to go somewhere I can win. So I'll go back there. They've got Kyrie. They've got a number one pick. They can probably move some things around. We can probably put together at least a core group of a team. And I'm going to be more competitive in Cleveland than I would be in Miami. And spin it however you want. There are a number of fans who look at that and say, man, you just jump wherever you can have help. You don't just say, well, hey, I'm in Cleveland. I'm going to do it on my own. I'm in Miami. I'm going to find a way. Yes, we're giving him a ton of credit now. But let's be real clear. He jumped because he thought it was an easier opportunity to go to Cleveland. The decision part two. Don't like LeBron because of it. I'm not saying all these reasons are right. I'm just explaining them. Don't hate me. Number four on our list of why so many people hate LeBron James. He's just overcovered. We get LeBron James jammed down our throat. ESPN could seriously name themselves the LeBron James Network. They blow him up constantly. And we can't just watch and enjoy what he does. Even last night, with the game that went on last night, phenomenal game. LeBron goes out and has another 40. We can't just sit there and say, hey, amazing game. He found a way to win. He got it done. We have to be told constantly how great he is. He's better than Michael. He's better than Bird. He's better than Magic. He's better than Abraham Lincoln, Alexander the Great. He's better than Jesus. Can we just watch the man play? Do we have to get that shoved down our throat all the time? He's a more complete player. He's a better rebounder. He's a better passer. He's a better defender. I want to just go over some stats real quick. Because we keep hearing he's so much better of a passer and rebounder and defender than Michael ever was. Points-wise, of course, Jordan is a little bit higher. For his career, Jordan was at 31.5. LeBron was at 27.3. But then, the assists, Jordan was at almost 5.5. LeBron's at 7. It's not that big of a difference. It's not that huge. Rebounding wise, Jordan was at 6.3, LeBron's at 7.1. Against 0.8, we're talking about this huge gap. It's 0.8. And in steals, Michael averaged 2.5 steals, and LeBron averages 1.7 steals a game. But here's the difference, and this will always be the difference with me. And people will say, well, could Michael have really led this team from the Cavaliers? Well, he led a horrible franchise in the Bulls. People look at the Bulls and say, well, yeah, they won 6. They were garbage when he went there. They were the laughingstock of the NBA when they went there. Michael won 6 rings. And make no mistake about this. Michael could have won 8 rings if he wanted to. He chose not to. He left for 2 years to basically go goof off and play baseball. But he could have won 8. So you can take LeBron in his more complete game and his more rebounds, his you know, 1.5 more assists and his 0.8 rebounds more. But I'll stick with Michael and I'll take the 6 rings and 8 if I really want them. So I think there's a lot of people that because we just get LeBron shoved down our throat. Oh, he's the best ever. He's the greatest ever. Let's do a special on LeBron. Let's have another LeBron insight look. We just get sick of it. Number 3 on our list of why so many people hate LeBron James. The decision part 1. Left his hometown to go win in Miami. And the you know the biggest thing that people look at when they see that they hey, Michael never joined up with Magic. He didn't get sick of getting beat in the East by the Celtics or by the Pistons. So he said, hey, Larry, I'm going to come play with you instead. Isaiah, I'm going to come join your team. He didn't do that. He found a way to win. He won on his own. And everybody says, well, he had Pippen. Understand this. Jordan made Pippen. Everybody, well, yeah, but Pippen's one of the 50th. Yeah, that's because he played with Michael. That's why he's on the top 50. Because when he came in, he was this little scrawny punk from Central Arkansas who had no idea even how to play the game. If you think he would have been that same player playing with you know, maybe Isaiah or somebody else, you're kidding yourself. He is one of the all-time greats because he played with Michael, and Michael made him raise his game. Let me give you just a brief story. Brief story. I know. I dropped too many of these stories. I know. Pippen, you know, they were playing the Pistons, and every year they were getting knocked out. And in the one game, a very, very pivotal game, it ended up eliminating them. Scottie Pippen had a headache. Migraine headache, had the towel over his head, couldn't play. Hey, I can't go. Tried to go out, was having problems with his vision, was having problems seeing, and the Bulls ended up getting knocked out. This is back in the early 90s. The next season, and everybody talked about it. Is Scottie too soft? Is he just not, you know, that kind of gamer? Is he just not, you know, he's just not Michael. He's not that guy that can just step up. He had the migraine. He's just, you know, kind of the way they're talking about like Kyrie Irving or something like that. He melts under pressure. The next season, they go out and they're playing the Pistons again. And in that game, Scottie, one of the early games in the series, Scottie Pippen goes out and he's just horrible. He's just bad. Does not have a good game. Can't hit anything, not defending very well, just really, really struggling. And the game ends, the Bulls lose, and they walk out to the bus, and nobody wants to say anything. Nobody wants to anger Michael Jordan. Jordan is fierce. We've talked about what a competitor he was. You don't want to say anything. Everybody's on the bus sitting quietly, and everyone knows that MJ is just seething, just so angry that Scottie, again, another year, but same old Scottie, he lets us down at crunch time. Nobody says anything. They're sitting on the bus. Michael gets on the bus, and everybody's kind of waiting. What's he going to say? Is he going to light into Scottie? Is he going to scream at everybody? You guys are soft. What's wrong with you? Michael gets on the bus and looks back at Scottie and just says, another headache, Scottie? That's all he said. That's all he said. People don't realize that the reason Scottie Pippen is one of the 50 greatest, if you believe that, I think that's probably a little bit overrated. That's just me. It was because Michael made him be that way. Don't get that confused. Some of the reason we hate LeBron James is he didn't always make his players. He went and said, hey, you know, I'm just going to go find new players. I'm going to take my ball and I'm going to go somewhere else and I'm going to find different players to play. I'm going to go play with Dwayne Wade. He's way better than what I had back in Cleveland. He's way better than the guys that I drug to the finals that year. I'm going to go play with Chris Bosh. He understands. He can figure out how to play with me. I'm going to go play with him. He's way better than what I had in Cleveland. There are people that will never, ever forget LeBron for not being able to raise teammates around him to a higher level and make them be great like MJ did with Scottie Pippen. Number 2 on the list, and this is my personal beef with LeBron, and this is just my own personal issue. I told you I look for body language a lot of times. It's the drama that goes with LeBron James. It's constant drama. He can't ever win a game, make a move, get fouled, have an injury without it just being this complete stage show. Everything is some like WWE drama. He's one of the most calculated people, and nothing ever looks authentic with him. It's never a twisted ankle. It's a fractured compound fracture, and he's falling down, and he's dying, and he's got to be it's never a foul. It looks like he got hit with like a sniper fire, like a little guard. Steph Curry will bump him, and he'll hit the ground, and oh, he's writhing in pain. I think that's one of my personal beefs with LeBron sometimes when I watch him. I'm like, dude, can't you just take a foul? Yeah, I got fouled and walked to the free throw line and hit him. He's got, oh, he falls down and he's holding his side and then he gets up and goes shit. For being the biggest and strongest, sometimes we hear he's the biggest, strongest NBA player ever. Sometimes you look a little bit delicate. I mean, you shouldn't be knocked completely off your feet by 180-pound Steph Curry, but we see it constantly. When you win a game, like, you know, there was like a game three game against Atlanta or whatever, you know, earlier in this playoff run, and he's like laying on the floor and he's just, ah, we did it. We finally did it. Easy. You're not in the school play. Can you just get up and, yeah, we beat the Hawks. We should beat the Hawks. We should sweep the Hawks. We expect this. There's a little bit too much drama. It's like he's acted every move out he's done in front of a mirror before he goes out and tries it out live on the floor. For me personally, I get a little tired of all the drama. That's just me. That's just me. You know, reasons a lot of people can't stand LeBron James. And the number one reason why so many people do not like LeBron James, he's really good. He's really, really good. We wouldn't care if he was horrible. We wouldn't care if he lost. If he was losing all these games and he wasn't very good and he came in and showed up when he wanted to and some nights he had good nights and other nights he was very, very average, we would not care one bit. He would just be another Carmelo Anthony. He wouldn't even be on our radar. We wouldn't pay attention. One of the reasons we hate LeBron James is because he's really, really good and he wins. There you have your top five, this list. Like, you know, I told you that, this week, it always is a little bit different. You never know what you're going to get with the top five. This week, top five reasons so many people do not like LeBron James. Hey, next week, going to be talking a little bit more about the NBA Finals, talk a little bit more about the NHL. Got some World Cup. Team USA goes again, I believe, tomorrow. Keep an eye on that. Got Major League Baseball. Got a few different shows coming up. I told you. Gonna have an email show coming up. Summer is downtime. We get into sports and summer kind of slows down. We don't have football. Basketball finally, you know, goes away and hockey goes away and we get, hey, don't think that it's going to be downtime here because we have some really fun stuff coming up. We've got some emails. We've got some debates. We've got some best of lists. We've got a number of things coming up. So don't go anywhere. Make sure you are tuning in to the Daily Dose every week. We will keep you entertained in the sports world. If you are not sure where to download the show or where to subscribe to the show, let me give you a few sites that I know for a fact are carrying the show. You can find us on iTunes. You can subscribe there. You can go to Podcast Republic. You can go to Podcast Addict. You can go to Stitcher. You can go to TuneIn. You can go to Podcatcher. There are a million different ways to find the podcast. Subscribe to us. Tell a friend. Our numbers keep going up. That is thanks to you, and I appreciate that. Keep sharing it. Let's get the word out. The bigger it gets, the better it gets. Don't be afraid to email. Like I said, we are going to have an email show coming up. I've received a number of great emails. If you have a thought or a question you would like to pose to me, please do. DailyDoseSports@gmail.com. That comes to the show, and we can get you an answer. As usual, have to thank JSP. Could not do this show without you. I would like to thank all of you so much for subscribing, listening, your feedback, your emails. I really, really do appreciate it. Hey, have a great week, everybody. I will see you all next week.
Small businesses. Direct Line guarantee to be any public liability insurance quote for the same cover. Can your insurance do that? New customers only. Qualifying criteria apply. Underwritten by UK Insurance Limited.